The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Silver of Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Oh, man. Tarek, I completely forgot. Friday. It's Friday.
Oh.
2 o'clock Friday.
Oh, my gosh. We got to get something ready then. We got to get some fog out then.
You remember what that means? Yeah, that's my bad. I should have reminded you. Tarek's been doing a great job this week. Sean's been out. But I just realized it. I didn't even think about it until I didn't get it. Because I was going to say it's the final hour of our broadcast week.
Well, would you like to hear some Bobcat right now?
Yeah, I sure would. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
There we go. There we go. That's what I crave in the final hour of my broadcast week. Not because I like Foghat that much. Because I like to be in the final hour of my broadcast week. Wow, I hit the post there. Back to the show. We're all good for 2:30, though, Tarek?
Of course.
Okay. Could I get it with vocals today?
Vocals from me or vocals from you?
No, from Cascade. We have a version of our 2:30 song with vocals from Cascade, and I kind of hunger for that today. Mm.
Well, you will get that.
I'm sure you'll find it. Okay. Let me get so much to get to. I have a guest coming up in just a few minutes. I have some great news for every family in America. Kellogg's, the cereal maker, has just announced the creation of a new woke cereal. In partnership with the LGBTQ plus media organization GLAAD, Kellogg has released a pride-themed cereal called Together with Pride. The woke cereal asks kids which genders they prefer to use. That's on the side of the box. Let's see. Here's the release on the website. Kellogg's, in partnership with all those groups, retailing for $4, Together with Pride cereal will be on supermarket shelves in May. For every purchase, Kellogg's will make a donation to these groups. The 7.8-ounce box is full of a rainbow variety of heart-shaped cereal bites and even edible glitter. What? There's an unedible glitter? I haven't eaten glitter since I was 3 years old. And you're telling me that there's a difference between edible and other glitter? Anyway, let me get back to the press release here. Heart-shaped cereal bites, even edible glitter. Kellogg's famous cereal figures are gathered on the exterior illustration, including Toucan Sam, Tony the Tiger, and the Rice Krispies elves, Snap, Crackle, and Pop. Always wondered about those three. Look for that. It's going to be in stores this month. Cereal, check your cereal aisle. Hey, I have a question about the governor's speech yesterday. He kept saying that he wants everybody vaccinated for public health. And one of the ways he's going to do it is by giving people booze. So one of my listeners forwarded an email from the State Department of the Liquor and Cannabis Board. Good afternoon. Well, this is from the director, Chandra Brady. This week, we've been working behind the scenes to partner with some segments of the liquor industry and the governor's office. We want to create exceptions that allow the liquor industry to promote public health by incentivizing COVID-19 vaccinations. Only in Washington. We want to promote public health. Here, have a drink. It's not exactly the healthiest thing. But the Seattle Fire Department sent out a tweet yesterday. They're set up at two breweries today. hey, Seattle, how about a shot and a beer? Stop by one of these two breweries today, Friday, May 14th, for a vaccination and a $1 beer. Yeah, if you're not in walking distance, drive over, drink your beer, and then drive away a little bit liquored up. Of course, you could, on your own dime, buy a second or third before you drive away. And Jay Inslee, he talked about this in his... By the way, Jay, Governor, I'm a friend. You got to get a better speechwriter. That was the most tedious, exhausting speech I've ever heard yesterday, haranguing us about getting vaccinated.
An additional strategy we are pursuing are incentives. Now, there's a lot of really good incentives for getting this vaccine. One, you might not die. Two, mm-hmm. someone you love might not die. Three, right. someone you love may not end up in the hospital. Four, okay. you now can go out without a mask. But we are looking for even more incentives. So as other states have done, we're looking for ways to expand people's incentives to pursue this safe, effective, life-saving vaccine.
Booze! I've got it! Booze! We'll give you a drink if you get a shot. Yeah, it's all for public health,
hey,
isn't it?
Dory, really quick, play the cut where he gets asked about the Ohio lottery. That'll connect your booze comments.
Okay, yeah. Ohio says they're going to have a lottery for people who get vaccinated, and you'll enter $1 million drawing for 5 straight weeks. And for the children, if the children get vaccinated, they can enter a lottery to win college tuition, board, books. Because the one message we want to get out for the sake of public health is kids, you want to, I wonder if the kids are going to be eligible for the liquor. If Jay will make an exception, can we get the 12-year-olds a shot too? I mean, not the shot, the booze. If they get a shot, you going to make an exception there, Governor, too? Because anyway, the message, the overriding message of all of this is, for the sake of public health, kids, we're giving away booze, and we want people to start gambling more. Very, very healthy activities.
Well, of course, a pint of a microbrew ale, any pint from Washington is worth $1 million from Ohio, so we consider those equal incentives.
Good one, Jay.
But no, I would not rule out these kind of incentives. I actually have discussed with my staff the potential of this type of grand prize lottery. I think it actually could make sense.
Gambling and booze. It's all for the public health. All right, I got a guest here. Let's get to the big lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, as we told you about a few days ago, we have a couple of epidemics we're dealing with. There's the coronavirus, which mainly kills the elderly. And then we have a fentanyl problem, and we have Mexican cartels that are trying to get a foothold here in Seattle, and that is killing mostly our young. I talked with the DEA a few days ago, and I want to welcome to the show Robert Hammer. He's the special agent in charge of Homeland Security Investigations. Robert, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dory.
Well, I'm telling you, with a name like Robert Hammer, you better have gone into some form of law enforcement. That's a perfect name.
Yeah, no, it's the criminals run for the hills when they hear that the hammer's after them.
I love it. So, but the thing we're talking about here is not a laughing matter. So, tell me how bad and the rate at which it's increasing this fentanyl problem is.
Yeah, so the fentanyl problem really is a national epidemic, and I think we're, you know, but everything hits home on a local basis, and so the Seattle and the entire Pacific Northwest are not immune to what we're seeing nationally in terms of the opioid epidemic, which is fentanyl is certainly front and center in right now. And so as we've seen in our statistics and based upon the number of seizures that we've had of fentanyl, for the past 3 years, we've experienced a doubling in the number of the amount of fentanyl that we're able to take off of the streets. And that's certainly, we're not able to get it all. We do our best, but we are certainly concerned about the just exponential growth in the amount of fentanyl that we're seeing on the streets.
So the reason the cartels lace the pills with fentanyl, because it's bad business to kill off your customers, but is it just a trade-off from their perspective because it is so much more powerfully addictive than just heroin? I mean, it's weird to say just heroin, but is that the reason they're willing to kill off their customers?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, I mean, I think that it is a business and they are in it for the profit. I think that we you know, for years we saw that the cartels were involved in meth and they still are involved in meth. And I think that they are diversifying now into, you know, expanding from the heroin into the more fentanyl. I think the fentanyl is easier to consume. It doesn't require needles. I think that there's less of a stigma about it. You can pop a pill. You can, you know, heat it up. You can ingest the vapors. So I think it's a multifaceted reason that they are, you know, I don't want to say switching, because they, you know, we still see an inordinate amount of meth coming in as well, but certainly the fentanyl numbers are on the rise.
I'll get to Seattle in just a minute, but how is it getting into the U.S.? My suspicion is that we do have quite a porous southern border and that it's just coming across like so many people come across. It's coming across with those people, but you're a Homeland Security guy. How are they getting it into the U.S.?
Yeah, so that's our primary focus is stopping the illegal importation of these drugs, of these the pill molds, you know, the ability for these folks to stamp these pills to make them look like everyday household painkillers, even though that there's fentanyl in them. So that's our primary focus. So I appreciate the question on that. We really view the threat stream as two focus, two areas. First, as you mentioned, the southwest border, we know and it's well documented that the Mexican cartels are pumping a large amount of narcotics across the southwest border through various mechanisms, tunnels, driving it across, having people smuggle it across, taking boats and skirting out through the Pacific Ocean up into California. There's just the methods that we have drones. There's no method off the table for these guys to get the stuff into the United States. So once it comes into the United States, and as it pertains to the Pacific Northwest and even Seattle, we really see the threat vector being that I-5 corridor. It's a natural route. There's a lot of ability of roads and highways to just go straight north here to the Pacific Northwest. And then actually, some of the cartels even pass through. Some of the product actually continues on into Canada. And so we're concerned about stopping that smuggling into Canada as well. So that's kind of one of the main vectors that we see is the Mexican cartels. And then we also have a second vector, which is our entrepreneurs. And so there are a large number of folks that, you know, go into business for themselves and say, hey, I want to be a fentanyl manufacturer here in the Pacific Northwest. And they'll use the dark net or you know, the internet and order some of these parts that are required in order to press their own pills here locally. And so those parts and the narcotics and all the different agents that are required to come in are typically shipped in from overseas, again, ordered on the dark net, and they come to your house. So you basically cut out the middleman, and then you become your own, you know, Breaking Bad, making your own narcotics Wow. here in your house. And we see a lot of that across the region as people try to, again, make their own money. And it's and money is the driving factor in all of this. People want to, you know, make money at the expense of others. And so we're seeing pill presses stop. Pop up in storage lockers. We're seeing them pop up in hotel rooms. We're seeing them pop up in people's homes, abandoned homes, you name it. It's just a small item that sits on top of a table that can churn out, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 pills in an hour. And it can really do damage to a community when those things move in.
Well, and I know you talked about that, the damage to the community, because you have said that they're trying to get a foothold in Seattle. I saw a quote from you, Robert, earlier this week where you said, I would say that they are a huge threat to the stability of this region. Now, I think all my listeners should know, need to know, you know, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I mean, so there is not, I think the impact, it's easy for for folks to think about, oh, cartels, they're bringing drugs in. And okay, so maybe it's like the Amazon truck. It pulls in, it drops off some stuff at your house, and then it leaves. That's not how the cartels work. I mean, they're an organization that has tentacles throughout. And so once they move in, again, that stability moves out. And so you'll see turf battles, you'll see gangs, you'll see other crimes start to pop up. So whether it's the murders, whether it's the human trafficking, whether it's the robberies, it's the money laundering, it's not as simple as, oh, the cartels are here and they're only involved in drugs, because that is a very myopic view of the impact that the cartels can have into a region. And so once they gain a foothold, once they establish themselves within the community, it really starts to seep into so many other areas that really degrade the quality and the lifestyle that the communities are used to.
Well, it's my contention that, first of all, I think it's crazy that we have done a de facto legalization of every drug in King County in personal possession amounts, because, this is maybe the lowest barrier place in the country to be a heroin addict. You will not be punished for using the drugs. The city of Seattle and the state legislature have looked at legislation that would allow people to shoplift with impunity, so that they can, feed their crime, get the money to feed their drug addiction. And then the murder rate. I mean, I don't think there's any question that the gangs are killing each other. That's the main reason our murder rate has gone up in Seattle and King County. And a lot of it is because they're fighting for turf as the distribution point for these drugs. Am I correct with that?
Absolutely. I mean, once gangs start establishing themselves, they will fight for their, survival. And if that means taking on other gangs that are trying to encroach on their turf, absolutely. But the loser of that is the community, the surrounding kids, the drive-by shooting, you can't walk, you don't feel safe to walk on the sidewalks at night. I mean, that's how you lose a community.
And the thing I think people need to understand is we're dealing with a death toll on two different scales. One, the people who are dying from the fentanyl, and then all the people who are dying are increased murder rate that's attached to all of this. So, and we only have a few seconds left, but what do you do about this when there's so much money involved and such a porous southern border, and we're a sanctuary state and we legalize drugs? I mean, it seems like everything has conspired against what you're trying to accomplish, Robert.
It's a challenge. I've spent the past 20 years of my life dedicated to, trying to make an impact. And I've got a team of agents across the entire Pacific Northwest, and quite frankly, the entire agency is working hard to protect the community, to protect the vulnerable populations out there. And we're partnered with a lot of other law enforcement folks across the region. We've got a great initiative going on with Seattle PD right now, trying to target this exact topic with fentanyl and gangs here in the city. And it's really focused on public safety, violence reduction, and protecting those vulnerable populations. And so it's an uphill battle, but I want to reaffirm to your listeners that we've got a great team here. We've got a great law enforcement community, and there's a lot of partners here in the city and in the region that are committed to trying to protect you guys.
Well, I want to reaffirm to you, because I know that there's a lot of just knee-jerk hatred of so much law enforcement, including Homeland Security, how much me and my listeners, I'm sure, appreciate what you do, because this is absolutely critical if we're going to start turning things around here, because things have gotten really bad. Robert, I really appreciate you coming on with me today. Thanks for your time.
No, I appreciate it. Happy to be back anytime.
Okay, I'll take you up on that. Robert Hammer, the Regional Director, Homeland Security, trying to keep this plague out of our region. I'm fascinated by this story because last night a kid was shot on I-5 close to Boeing Field, 18 years old. Three people were shot in Rainier Valley on Wednesday night. There aren't any protests. Nobody's marching in the street. The drug gangs are just trying to kill each other. Nobody died in those four shootings, but they're just trying to kill each other. And nobody seems to care about that. Why is that? Why? Why does people not care? All right, that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Check the news for you, and then lots more to come. Oh, our awesome audio of the week next half hour is fantastic this this week. So we got lots more great stuff. Stay right there. So we talked about the ridiculous equity training and all the made-up pronouns that the Edmonds School District has introduced. I will say, Washington, for some reason, well, I've talked to parents who are absolutely dedicated to getting this racist curriculum out of our schools, this hateful curriculum. But in Washington, we're so far left here that it's an uphill battle. But around the country, in Virginia, a dad was speaking to a school board, and he was making too much sense, so they figured out a way to silence this guy.
I'm going to read an excerpt from a freshman honors English class in Stonebridge. She's a hoe, just like her sister. Every dude on the courts. It's time for LCPS to get their acts and their house in order. The curtain has been pulled back.
Okay, I got to pause it. So that is part of the freshman reading curriculum in the school district, calling somebody a hoe and that she bleeps everybody on the basketball court. I mean, it is shocking the kind of pornography that the radical left is trying to introduce to our kids.
And people can now see the deficient leadership that's been in this county. My five-year-old is being peddled transgender books in her library. Teenagers are being served pornography under the guise of young adult literature. Do something! Be a leader! Because if you know what? The citizens of this county deserve better. And if you're not willing to do it...
Can you please cover your nose with your mouth?
You're all vaccinated. What the freak? Give me 10 seconds back. Give me 10 seconds back.
There, you know the rules. Thank you.
And they shut off his microphone. He's pointing out that ninth graders are reading pornography. And they shut off his microphone because as he was talking, his mask just slipped right below his nostrils instead of covering it. And then here's a mom at the same school board meeting with another example of the pornography that is being fed to kids.
She started screaming, cursing at me, and carrying on. I threw her in the closet for a couple of days. She kept on screaming, begging to be let out, begging for water. Every time she made too much noise, I'd walk in and kick her.
Jasper wasn't even my boyfriend, just this dude I did some hacking with once in a while. He was pretty basic library systems, low security. Not in my league at all, but he had a big... And sometimes a girl just needs a big...
I tiptoed toward the door, peering through the window at the boy, his pants around his ankles, squeezed between April's straddled legs as she lay on top of a teacher's desk. I gripped his arms and flipped him around, pushing him against the wall. His eyes...
I gotta tell you, I'm horribly uncomfortable. And ordinarily, I wouldn't play this. I know we're bleeping all the words that can't be said. But I'm uncomfortable with all just the theme. But I'm playing this because you have to know that flat out pornography is being fed to our children, to ninth graders. And it is a sickness that is infecting our schools.
Widened, mouth dropping. Hey, what are you doing? He chuckled nervously. I took a deep breath before dropping on my shaky knees, the ground cold.
Okay, I can't go on with that. But that's what's being introduced in our schools. And parents around the country, Texas has made great inroads. Virginia's fighting back. When's Washington going to fight back against this curriculum? We've got the most radical sex ed curriculum in the country for our kids. We've got pornography being introduced to our children. We have anti-cop propaganda being fed to first graders in local schools. We have school districts that link to quotes from cop killers who are fugitives from the law. This is a real, true sickness that we're dealing with right now. And, I mean, if people aren't willing to protect their children, then what's going to happen to us? If people won't protect their own kids, then nothing's worth fighting for. Parents have to rise up. And I don't know what I would have done if my girls were of school age and this nonsense was being peddled to them. I mean, I truly would treat any teacher who assigned a kid that the way I would treat, a flasher on the street. I'd want them arrested. Parents have to rise up. I want to update you on one other story. We told you yesterday about up in Everett. A guy was walking his dog, and he just started randomly harassing people in the street. And then there was a woman with her grandchild, and he went up and started to attack them. Well, there were two good Samaritans, and the woman, she called her son, who lives close by, and said, "This guy says he's going to attack me." The son raced over, but he grabbed his gun first. And witnesses told Channel 7, update, the guy who was walking his dog had a baton and was smacking
people. His screaming kept going on and on for about 4 or 5 minutes.
He's obviously belligerently screaming at the women.
He's got a baton and he's going after two women and a baby girl.
Well, now the woman who was attacked is speaking out. Shelley Williams, she was with her grandchild. She called her son, and she described, told Channel 7 what led up to calling her son.
He just ran into her with the bike, knocked her down, tried to grab her and throw her out into the traffic, and then proceeded off on his bike. He looked back and saw her grab her cell phone. And then he started yelling at us, saying that we were the devil and Satan and that she assaulted him and don't call the police. So I called my son, and of course I was hysterical. I said, "You need to get over here now. He's going to beat us up. You know, he's going to beat us up."
And the guy walking his dog, he had a hand behind his back. And when the son got there, he was swinging the baton with one hand. And then he brought the other hand out and it had pepper spray in it. The son thought it was a gun and he shot and killed the
guy. And in the time that he pepper sprayed my son had a gun in his hand and the gun went off. And he never intentionally meant to shoot at him or anything. It just went off because he got pepper sprayed. He couldn't see. He was kind of shocked that all that happened.
And the woman says they're all just devastated.
We're all having a really hard time. We're really devastated by what happened and how it happened.
Just a beautiful spring night in Everett, and chaos came out of nowhere. It's very sad. Very sad, these stories. Early indications, the son will not be charged for shooting and killing the aggressor, the attacker. Okay, quick timeout, and then our favorite sound bites of the entire week coming up next. What a week, what a show, what a show, what a week. All right, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the week.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the week.
Sadly, President Joe Biden is almost daily providing just wacky sound bites. This week, he had just gotten out of a meeting with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Minutes later, he had forgotten Kevin McCarthy's name.
You guys are bad. I'm not supposed to be answering all these questions. I'm supposed to leave, but I can't resist your questions.
What does that mean? You're the president of the United States. I'm not supposed to be answering questions. He's going to get in trouble from his hand.
I came away encouraged. But I want to make it clear to you. I'm encouraged not just because of a solid meeting with the Republican leader in the House. And
that's Kevin McCarthy is his name. Oh, and by the way, there is a new Mexico.
Hi, Tim. How are you? I know Minnesota's great, but it can't be as nice a weather as there is in Mexico now, is there? So, we got six governors with us today, Democrats and Republicans, and they're meeting the moment. Governor Mills of Maine, Governor DeWine of Ohio, Governor Cox of Utah, Governor Walz of Minnesota, Governor Baker of Massachusetts, and Governor Lujan Grisham of Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico. Twice, Mexico. Which means Montgomery Burns is now running the country.
Actually, sir, we've been booked into a small theater in New Mexico.
Whoa. Slow down there, maestro. There's a New Mexico.
Yes, there is. What else? This is a good
one. The Liz Cheney McCarthy thing is above my pay grade. I mean, I have enough trouble figuring out my own party all the time, let alone Republicans.
Above my pay grade? You're the president of the United States. What's above that? Oh, your handlers are above that.
There you go. Okay. Well, first of all, hi, everybody. It's good. I'm supposed to look over here, not at you guys. And help us get there, we've added two new tools. One, Americans can go to vaccines.gov, or they can text their zip code to their zip code, text it to 438829.
Reading a teleprompter is very hard. Jay Inslee, 40 minutes yesterday, holding our state hostage, our business community. He says he'll open up everything June 30th. And the reason it's not sooner is because everyone has to get vaccinated. How important are vaccines and vaccinated and vaccination is to Jay Inslee?
Your vaccinations, people vaccinated, vaccination. We have a vaccine that to the vaccine now of the vaccine fully vaccinated as far as vaccinations. Vaccination rate with COVID vaccine, this life-saving vaccine, vaccines, vaccination rate, fully vaccinated, vaccines are fundamental. Vaccination, students who are vaccinated, vaccination rate, vaccines, vaccine, life-saving vaccine, fully vaccinated, vaccinated. To vaccinated individuals, vaccinated individuals.
I think he wants you to get the vaccine. And then finally, the story of a kid named Drew Robinson. A year ago, Drew made a decision to take his own life, put a gun to his head, and he fired it. This kid's playing minor league baseball. He was always a very talented baseball player and an aspiring major leaguer, but he was gripped with despair a year ago.
Split second goes by. I'm looking at the exact same thing I was looking at before I pulled the trigger. What happened? I don't feel anything. It must not have worked. Reach my hand up to my face, feel the blood. What's going on? What happened? How am I still here? How am I still seeing things? How am I not in pain? Lay there for 5 to 10 minutes, just absolutely confused. How can this happen? Hour and a half goes by. At this time, I'm just a hole through my face. Blood's falling down into my mouth. I'm swallowing a bunch of blood. I realize I'm in bad shape.
And he blew out one of his eyes. He's only has one eye now to see with. He made a 911 call in the morning.
911 emergency, police, fire, medical.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
I tried to commit suicide last night, and I made it through. And now I think I just detached my eye, maybe. I can't open my right eye, and I have a huge hole in my head, and I'm in a lot of pain.
What'd you do?
I shot myself in the head.
Is there any serious bleeding?
Yes.
Is there more than one wound?
I don't think it came out the other side. I think it's still in my head somewhere.
I'm sending the paramedics to help you now. Stay in the line. I'll tell you exactly what to do next, okay?
Okay. Ow. Ow.
Where are you?
Okay, here's why he believes he's still here.
I'm supposed to help people. I'm supposed to help people get through something that doesn't seem winnable. I'm meant to be alive. I'm meant to be alive.
And then, amazingly, this week, playing AAA minor league baseball with just one
at
eye.
The top of the second, the Rivercats own a 3-1 advantage. There's a long drive to right field. Back goes Pinder, and this one's out of here. Drew Robinson at a Silverado High School.
Man, prevailing over death. I'm out of here. Tom and Curley coming up next. Have a fantastic weekend. See you Monday. High noon. Hello.
I wasn't even listening. I was listening to podcasts. Podcasts are great. Radio's boring.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You really are a fantastic audience.